Good morning. Medicine Ball Caravan time here on KRVS Lafayette Lake Charles. I'm Cecil Doyle. Today, a special edition will be airing the Harry Nilsson Special Smeshal. As a brand new reissue of all of his LPs that is being put out. Over the next hour, we'll be listening to remembrances, stories, and of course the great music of one of the 20th century's greatest songwriters, Harry Nilsson. It's the Harry Nilsson Special Smeshal on today's Medicine Ball Caravan.
He liked to think he was a tough guy, and he liked to think he was cynical, and he liked to think that he was kind of a Lenny Bruce character who saw the truth behind all the phony sentimentalism and romanticism of the world. But the truth was that he was a romanticist, and he was really just a pussycat.
Harry Nilsson followed his own path. He was part iconoclast and part storyteller, and his curiosity, sense of humor, and dramatic flair led him to create an extremely wide range of music. In the next hour, we'll listen to a lot of Harry's work and talk with friends and family about the man and the artist. Welcome to the Harry Nilsson Special Smeshal. I'm Bud Scapa. You can climb a mountain. You can swim the sea. You can jump into the fire. But you never need me. Welcome back to the Harry Nilsson Special Smeshal. I'm Bud Scapa.
First of all, I'm not a musician. I just use the instruments to write with.
Harry Nilsson.
I use piano, and then when I can't find any more chords, I go to guitar, you know, and it's refreshing, and back to piano, and then to the guitar, and percussion things, you know, things you can hit with your hands or something. That's it, because I'm not a musician. This is, I'm a songwriter, a singer, you know.
Producer Richard Perry.
I would say he was a very special songwriter. I think that, especially in the early period, he really wrote like in a very kind of theatrical manner, and also heavily Beatle-influenced, which, as far as I'm concerned, you can't be too influenced by the Beatles.
Nilsson based this early song on the Ten Commandments.
Ten little Indians standing in a line. One stood looking at another man's wife. Then there were nine. Nine little Indians, their hearts all full of hate.
Ten Little Indians, sung by Harry Nilsson.
Now I would like to spend a few minutes and talk about song construction, which is one of the most important parts of songwriting. For any of those aspiring songwriters in the audience, I have a few comments to make. First of all, in construction, I might say that you have to get to know your song. You gotta kinda take it apart, put it back together again, keep it clean, because someday in combat it might save your life. And that's the, yes.
Your fingers on the strings of your guitar, not your piano. If you write it on piano, don't do that.
As a musician and songwriter, Nilsson was mostly self-taught. He spent time studying other people's music, especially the Beatles.
I hated the Beatles because I said, you know, they're beating me to the punch. And then there was that moment when you say, well, you're either with them or against them. And I decided to go for the latter, and I said, yeah, they really are that good.
Singer and songwriter Jimmy Webb.
We'd be arguing about the Beatles, and he'd say, the Beatles are the only band. There's only one band. That's the Beatles. No one else matters.
In 1967, he put his own stamp on a Beatles tune.
My babe, don't buy me presents. How can you laugh when you know I'm down? Beep, 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 yeah. I got some. Catch you talking to that boy again. Gonna let you down and leave you flat. Gonna let you down and leave you flat. Because I told you before, you can't do that. It's the second time I caught you talking to him. I got to tell you one more time. I think it's a sin.
sha-la-la, ooh, 'cause I'm the one who stole your love. But if it's seen, sha-la-la, ooh, me talking that way, they laugh in my face, so please listen to me if you wanna stay.
Would you like to know?
I can't help this feeling, I go out of my mind. I told you before, you can't believe in yesterday. My babe, don't have any presents. Strawberry Beatles forever.
Harry Nilsson performed his own version of The Beatles' You Can't Do That. You're listening to the Harry Nilsson Special Schmeschel. I'm Bud Scapa. Nilsson covered many Beatles songs over the years, but most of his material came from his imagination and his life.
I think my mother was always sort of like, she wasn't a stage mother or anything, but I think she herself wanted to be in show business at one time. I think that sort of rubbed off on me. And when I was a little child, they used to put me on the piano and have me sing songs to the adults, you know.
Harry Nilsson.
I used to lay in bed when I was about 10 or 11, in the solitude of the small dark room in Brooklyn. If I wasn't counting to a million or to infinity, I would put a pillow over my head and put on a show for an invisible audience. And now presenting me.
When Nilsson was 3, his father left the family. His mother told him a story of why his father was not there, which turned out to be false. The father emerged when Harry began to have more public success as a singer.
Years ago when the boy, he was his daddy's pride and joy, but when the daddy went away, it was such a rainy day that he brought out all his toys.
Harry's wife, Una Nilsson, and attorney Lee Blackman.
Harry told me that for many years he thought his father had died in World War II, that his father was a CB in World War II.
Then, in the late 1960s, Harry found out. He found out not only that his father was alive, but that he had remarried and had a family.
When he was about 27 years old, he found out his father was living in Florida. He went to visit him. I think that must have been very hard on him.
A year before his reunion, Nilsson had summed up his father's abandonment in a song called 1941. It was a theme that he returned to many times in his music. Alan Shipton wrote the biography, Nilsson, The Life of a Singer-Songwriter.
The two people who have given me information about the way in which this song impacted on Harry and his family were his half-brother Gary, who was the second son of his father's next marriage. And Gary said that he had only once seen Harry's father in tears, and it was when he put on for the very first time that record and realised that it was about him. So that's one side of the family experience, that his father was devastated by the song, by self-realisation. But the other person who gave me a very long account of the feelings in the song was his son Zach, to whom Harry did exactly what his father had done, walked out on that marriage when Zach was 3 years old. And when Harry wrote it, he had no means of knowing that history would repeat itself, but the prophecy that it embodied came chillingly true in the story of his second marriage to Diane.
Well, in 1941, a happy father had a son, and by 1944, the father walks right out the door. And in 45, the mom and son were still alive. But who could tell in 46 if the two were to survive? Well, the years were passing quickly, but not fast enough for him. So he closed his eyes till 55, then he opened them up again. And when he looked around, he saw a clown, and the clown seemed very gay. And he said, I'd like to join that circus clown and run away.
Harry Nilsson.
La-la-la. Well, he followed every railroad track and every highway sign, and he had a girl in each new town and the towns he left behind. And the open road was the only road he knew, but the color of his dream was slowly turning into blue. Then he met a girl, the kind of girl he'd wanted all his life. She was soft and kind and good to him, so he took her for his wife. And they got a house not far from town, and in a little while the girl had seen the doctor, and she came home with a smile. Now in 1961, a happy father had a son, and by 1964, the father walked right out the door. And in 65, the mom and son were still around. But what will happen to the boy when the circus comes to town?
"1941," sung by Harry Nilsson. Derek Taylor was the publicist for the Beatles in the late 60s. He heard 1941 and fell in love with Nilsson's music. Taylor sent copies of the album Pandemonium Shadow Show to all the Beatles. Harry Nilsson.
So one day I was early, it was 5 in the morning, I got a phone call, and there's this voice long distance. "Hello, hello, who is it?" "It's John." "John who?" "It's John Lennon." "Is this really John?" He says, "Yeah, I just wanted to say you're fantastic, man. I've been listening to you all weekend, you know, he's great, 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 you know, he's just fantastic." The following Monday, I got a phone call from Paul. "How are you? Just calling to say you're fantastic, you know, just, oh, you're great, you know, and really love what you did and all that stuff, you know, Derek played it for us and hope to see you soon, you know." Clunk. The next Monday morning, I get up, comb my hair, 5 o'clock in the morning, waiting for a call from Ringo. There was no call, but he ended up being our best man at our wedding, so that's okay.
Biographer Alan Shipton.
Harry adored the Beatles from the moment they set foot in the United States. And then, of course, once he gets on to later in his career, on all his main albums, there are references to the Beatles. It's either songs like She's Leaving Home, which are real Beatles songs, or they're little allusions. The Beatles songbook was just under the surface in Harry's brain in everything he did musically. And it's a question of timbre. He could sound like Lennon. He could sound like the four of them singing together when he overdubbed. He could be the perfect foil for Ringo, and it is indeed. I mean, You're 16, You're Beautiful and You're Mine. All the other voices on that wonderful choir of backing voices, every single one of them is Harry Nilsson.
In 1968, John Lennon and Paul McCartney were asked about their favorite American singer and group. They both said Nilsson. Harry made his way to England that year to meet them. Lennon shared parts of the forthcoming White Album, and Harry shared some of his new material, including a song written while on the phone. It became a hit for the band Three Dog Night.
Well, I was dialing a telephone. I got a busy signal, and it was going beep, 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 beep. I just let it stay busy and just wrote it on the phone while I was listening to this busy signal, you know.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. Yes, it's the saddest experience you'll ever know. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. It's just no good anymore since you went away. Now I spend my time just making rhymes of yesterday. Because
Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know.
One, sung by Harry Nilsson. Coming up, soundtracks and a lot more music. I'm Bud Skapa, and you're listening to the Harry Nilsson Special Schmeschel. Welcome back to the Harry Nilsson Special Schmeschel. I'm Bud Skapa. Midnight Cowboy was one of the biggest movies of 1969, winning the Oscar for Best Film. One of Harry Nilsson's recordings inadvertently became the theme song. Attorney Lee Blackman and Harry Nilsson.
Everybody's Talkin' was not written for Midnight Cowboy. Everybody's Talkin' was Harry's single, and it had been out before the film.
I was approached by Jerry Hellman and John Schlesinger, and they asked if I'd be interested in writing a song for Midnight Cowboy, a title song. They showed me four reels of uncut material, you know, and I thought, what? This could be the best movie ever made, you know, this is incredible. You bet, you bet.
He wrote, I Guess the Lord Must Be in New York City. They also went to Bob Dylan, asked him to write a song. I understand that one was Lay Lady Lay that Dylan wrote, and they also went to Joni Mitchell and asked her to write a song. All of them wrote songs for the film and submitted it to the producers, and they listened to all the songs, and after hearing all this,
they decided to stick with Everybody's Talking, which they had been using as a temporary track until they found a song for it. And they just got used to it, so used to it that they didn't want to drop it, and they left it in. Thank you very much.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stopping still. I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Clothes, banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave.
Everybody's Talking, sung by Harry Nilsson. With a Grammy Award under his belt for the theme song of Midnight Cowboy, Harry Nilsson took one of many left turns away from what was expected of his career. In 1970, Nilsson spent 6 weeks in the studio working on an album of songs by Randy Newman. He and Newman were the only musicians, though some songs had over 100 overdubs of Newman's pianos and Harry singing. Una Nilsson.
He loved to do things differently. He just couldn't go in and do the same thing over and over again. That would have been very safe, very easy, but it wouldn't have satisfied him.
Jerry Beckley of the band America.
The notion of Harry doing a whole album of Randy Newman is, I'm sure, unnerving to the people at the label who are waiting for the new Harry album with all of his new songs. So he took some turns that were obviously Harry turns, not career-oriented. Having said that, there was no better consistently great composer at that time than Randy Newman. I think he was just writing immense stuff, and Harry realized that and wanted to be the guy to showcase.
Since you're the delegate from Kansas, will you kindly take the floor and tell us what is Kansas thinking and what is Kansas for? Kansas is for the farmer. We stand behind the little man, and we need a firehouse in Topeka. So help us if you can.
Beehive State, performed by Harry Nilsson and Randy Newman. After the Newman album, Harry took yet another leap to new territory. Harry created a musical fable called The Point. He and animator Fred Wolf created a television special about a town where everything literally had a pointy end, except a boy named Oblio, who had a round, pointless head. Singer and songwriter Van Dyke Parks, Harry Nilsson, and Jerry Beckley.
Harry was an idea man, see? He was an idea man. He was had just everything was absolute mercury.
Well, it's just an idea I had one night. I think it was on some kind of weirdness.
The more you walk around thinking about the idea, the more permutations grow out of it, you know. I just realized it was the world's longest pun, and I realized, God, point of sale, point of view, point of wall, you know, and all those things.
The Point is one of those examples that you. It just shows you that Harry is unique unto himself. Here was an incredible concept that he made into a musical at a time when musicals couldn't have been more off the charts.
Me and my arrow, straighter than narrow, wherever we go, everyone knows it's me and my.
Me and My Arrow from The Point, sung by Harry Nilsson. I'm Bud Scapa, and you're listening to the Harry Nilsson Special Schmeschel.
Hello.
Hi, is this Harry?
Yes.
Hi. I was going to ask you something.
Well, why didn't you?
When are you going to have a concert?
Oh, I don't do concerts. That's for other people alone who want to do that.
Huh. You're not going to have a concert ever?
No.
Harry Nilsson was one of the few artists who found success without playing live. Songwriters Van Dyke Parks and Perry Botkin Jr. were longtime friends of Harry.
He was terrified. And I don't remember exactly why, but he was terrified to do a live performance.
He just couldn't do it. I don't know if it was fear of flying or fear of falling or I don't know what it was.
There are very few guys that have had the success that he had without doing that. And he almost pulled it off. Well, he did pull it off. We're sitting here doing this show, this documentary. I mean...
One of the main reasons Harry found enduring success came from teaming up in 1971 with producer Richard Perry. Alan Shipton wrote the book, Nielsen, The Life of a Singer-Songwriter.
All Harry's best work seems to have been the result of collaboration with somebody who really got him firing on realizing the next stage of his ambition. So Richard Perry comes along, and it's no accident that Nielsen Schmielsen is the most successful album he ever made. It's a perfect marriage of an ambitious producer who had a knack for taking performers and reinventing their careers. And this is the time of Barbara Streisand's Stony End. He completely revamped her and really kick-started the second phase in her career. He just brought Fats Domino back to the stage with Fats's Back. He'd sold that totally unlikely performer, Tiny Tim, both sides of the Atlantic. So Richard was a Svengali, a wonderful producer who had the ability to conjure unexpected sounds out of people and really succeed with them. Went on to do the same for Carly Simon, to do it for Art Garfunkel and lots of other people. So Richard is a towering figure in the Nielsen story. And it happened just at the time that Harry needed somebody new to bounce ideas off.
Producer Richard Perry.
He called me up one morning and said, I got to come over and talk to you. So he came over to my house in Laurel Canyon. And he asked me if I'd like to produce him. I said, I would love to, under one condition, that he had to trust me and let me call the shots, which he agreed to. I felt that Harry could be my Beatles, and he in turn, I suppose, felt that I could be his George Martin, which I think we did a pretty good job of accomplishing on the Nielsen Schmielsen album. That was the goal, to make as close to a Beatles quality album as possible. In some ways, he could be completely normal, and other times he could be totally eccentric. So once you knew how to roll with the punches, it kind of made life interesting in the studio. The first song we did was Gotta Get Up, which is the first song on the album. And like right from that opening, the way the piano starts, you could sense that this was going to be something special.
Gotta get up, gotta get out, gotta get home before the morning comes. What if I'm late, got a big day, gotta get home before the sun comes up. Up and away, got a big day, sorry can't stay, I gotta run, run, yeah. We never thought it would end then. We never thought it would end. We used to carry on and drink and do the rock and roll. We never thought we'd get older. We never thought we'd grow cold. But now, gotta get up, gotta get out, gotta get home before the morning comes. What if I'm late? Got a big day, gotta get home before the sun. Never even knew his name. He'd come to town and he would pound it for a couple of days, and then he'd sail across the bubbling waves, and those were happier days. But now, gotta get up, gotta get out, gotta get home before the morning comes. What if I'm late? Got a big day, gotta get home before the sun. Sorry, can't stay. I gotta run, run, yeah.
Gotta Get Up, sung by Harry Nilsson. Nilsson wrote most of the material on his albums, but certain songs caught his ear. One of those was called Without You by the group Badfinger. Producer Richard Perry.
When we had recorded Without You, he originally did a piano voice demo that was just him, like, plodding on the piano, where he just, like, sung his guts out, but, like, in a sort of a painful way. You know, I mean, he was going for the pain element of the song. I can't live if living is without you.
I can't live if living is without you. I can't live.
About halfway through the album, we had a difference of opinion that didn't sort of settle itself easily. So, like two proper gentlemen, we decided to have a meeting over high tea at the Dorchester Hotel to discuss what we were going to do. I said, Harry, you do remember that when you came to me and asked me to produce you, I asked you, my only condition was that I would have control. Creative control. He looks me dead in the face and said, well, I lied. And then with that, we both looked at our watch and realized that we were late for the session, that he was supposed to do his vocal on Without You. Without another word, we jumped into a taxi, ran down to the studio. He went right out and sang the vocal that you hear on the record.
No, I can't forget this evening, or your face as you were leaving. But I guess that's just the way the story goes. You always smile, but in your eyes your sorrow shows. Yes, it shows. No, I can't forget tomorrow. When I think of all my sorrow, well, I had you there, but then I let you go. And now it's only fair that I should let you know what you should know.
Without you.
Without You, sung by Harry Nilsson. In a minute, The Wildlife, Pussycats, and the American Songbook. I'm Bud Scapa, and you're listening to the Harry Nilsson Special Schmeschel. Welcome back to the Harry Nilsson Special Schmeschel. I'm Bud Scapa.
It's an artist's prerogative to be indulgent to himself. He owes it to everyone else to be indulgent to himself. And if it's at the cost of what he thinks is what the public might think it might result in, that's tough luck. Here come the daylight.
After the success of the album Nilsson Schmilsson, Harry went back into the studio with friend and producer Richard Perry, but things were not the same.
He would show up to the studio with a half a bottle of cognac. The first half had already been consumed that afternoon. He would no longer allow my input into the songs. I mean, he would just like come up with a song and I'd say, well, can we talk about this? No. That's the song. That's the vocal. And that's why you've got an album that still has some lovely moments in it, but, I mean, there's no real depth or stature to it anywhere near what the Schmilsson album was, and I was expecting it to be the next level. I did everything I could as more as his friend than anything, trying to explain to him why you're doing this. You know, it could be so much better than what we're doing. It just, you know, he was determined to do things the way he wanted to on that album.
Bang, bang, shoot 'em up, destiny. Bang, bang, shoot 'em up to the moon. Bang, bang, shoot 'em up, one, two, three. I'm a spaceman. Nobody cares about me. Hey, Mother Earth, would you bring me back down safely to the sea? Around and around and around and around is all she ever said to me. I want to make a good run. I wanted to go to the moon. I knew that it had to be fun. Send me real soon. I want to be a spaceman. I want to be it so bad. But now that I am a spaceman, I'd rather be back on the pad. Hey, Mother Earth, would you bring me back down safely to the sea? Around and around and around and around is just a lot of lunacy. Hey, Mother Earth, better bring me back down, save me to the sea.
Spaceman, performed by Harry Nilsson. After his two albums with Richard Perry, Nilsson decided that the next project would be a set of standards with arranger and conductor Gordon Jenkins.
I figured my voice was probably at its purest and best at that moment. And I thought, even though I was smoking and drinking and doing all the nastiness, I figured this is the time to really capture my voice on tape.
Composer and publisher Perry Botkin Jr.
I think of all the work that he did, he loved that album more than anything else that he did, because those tunes meant a lot to him, and he could sing them. That's what was so phenomenal.
It had to be you. It had to be you. I wandered around and finally found somebody who could make me be true, could make me be blue, and even be glad just to be sad thinking of you.
It Had to Be You, sung by Harry Nilsson.
I was associated then with drinking and carousing, and because I think Keith Moon's a friend and Ringo's a friend, we have good times, people assume you're raising hell if you're having a good time. But I promise you folks, we don't raise hell, but we do have a good time.
Nilsson jumped into the rock and roll lifestyle. Drugs, drinking, binges that lasted days, trips across the country on impulse. Friends described it as the Harry Ride, and no one knew where and when it would end. One of Harry's fellow carousers was John Lennon, and in early 1974, Lennon began producing Harry's next album. Jimmy Webb and Perry Botkin Jr. were longtime friends of Nilsson.
To have John was like giving Harry the best present he could have. That almost made up for the fact that his father left him. And, you know, there may be some of you out there saying, yeah, Webb's being the amateur psychiatrist now. But I think that that almost made up for it, because Harry really wanted to be one of the Beatles.
They were a friendship made in hell, as far as I'm concerned. John had his troubles, Harry had his troubles, and they got together, and really, that was when Harry totally blew his voice.
He and John Lennon were egging each other on as to who could scream the loudest and scream the longest and put the most ragged, actually self-destructive vocals on tape as possible. He told me one time that there was blood on the microphone. Harry told me. He said there was blood on the microphone.
Biographer Alan Shipton.
The sense of awe of somebody whom Harry looked up to as an artist and a producer never really went away. So when his voice was not in great shape on Pussycats, instead of saying, look, John, my voice isn't working, let's come back in a couple of weeks' time, he carried on and ruined his voice, really, for the next 3 or 4 years. That's the mark of somebody who's not being rational about a friendship, but who is able to be a partner in terms of creating music, but still a partner who sees himself as the slightly junior partner in the whole business.
In the wintertime, keep your feet warm, but keep your clothes on, don't forget me. Keep the memories, but keep your powder dry too. While the fireflies are all around you.
Don't Forget Me, sung by Harry Nilsson. In 1973, Nilsson met Una O'Keefe.
A girlfriend and I were working for the summer. We were students, and we were working for the summer at Rumpelmeyer's ice cream parlor. And one evening, it was a rather quiet evening, and both of us were sort of leaning up against the wall, and in walked Harry.
Sunday night, half drunk, flask of brandy, one pocket, copy of U.S. News in the other. And as I walked to my hotel, I noticed Rumpelmeyer's ice cream parlor. And there was Una.
Basically, the first thing Harry ever said to me was, "You have the most beautiful eyes I've ever seen. Will you marry me?" Obviously, no one had ever said anything like that to me before, but it was very special. And he said, no, really. He said, "What can I do to prove my intent?" And we said, "Oh, well, we like flowers and we like melons." Now, you might think that's a very odd thing to say, but perhaps I'd never eaten a honeydew melon.
Right. Went to my hotel, showered, sobered, changed. The melons were easy, Smiler's delicatessen, but the flowers, that's another question. 11 p.m. on a Sunday night, August 12th, 1973, flowers at 11 p.m. "Hey, what about the docks?" "Right." So we actually found a florist. He was preparing for a funeral the next morning.
The end of the evening, when my friend and I were getting ready to leave, the manager came over and he said, "There's a man waiting for you outside the kitchen." And we were very excited and we went outside and there was Harry, leaning nonchalantly against a long limousine. And on the pavement beside him, he had baskets of flowers and melons and soft toys.
They were totally knocked out. They hugged me and they hugged me. It was the sweetest hug I'd ever had.
They married 3 years later and had 6 children. Biographer Alan Shipton, here's the effect that Una and his new family had on Harry's life and music.
It's not really until he meets Una and writing about enduring love or types of love takes over. And then, of course, he starts writing a second wave of songs for children as the family that followed his first family with Diane and Zach becomes the centre of his life. So we have songs like Blanket for a Sail. That's something he wrote for his kids in London, used to sing to them. And so there's a second round of having another chance, which I think Harry did very successfully.
Well, on the ocean, far beyond the seven seas, there's a tiny little boat, faith is keeping her afloat, and a tiny little skipper with his worn and tattered coat to see the law of the ocean. Says you shall never fail. Use your heart as a rudder, faith as a compass, and a blanket for a sail. Rest your head on a pillow and I'll tell you a tale. Use your heart as a blanket and a blanket for a sail. Row, row, row your boat gently through a dream. Wet on the ocean, far beyond the seven seas, there's a tiny little boat, faith is keeping her afloat, with a tiny little skipper and a worn and tattered coat to see the law of the ocean. Yeah, it says that you should never fail. Use your heart as a compass, faith as a rudder, and a blanket for a sail. We'll be right back.
Blanket for a Sale, sung by Harry Nilsson. Producer Richard Perry was a friend of Harry's.
He was the quintessential kid, and I think maybe that boyish personality and the desire to have fun most of the time. Of course, there was always also the extreme opposite. The dichotomy of those two personalities was fascinating and troublesome, but I think when people smile, it's because they remember the fun-loving guy that he really was. And that's important, that's the most pungent of all the memories.
The Harry Nilsson Special Schmeschel was produced by Paul Chufo for Joyride Media. Our executive producer is Eric Mulk. Our associate producer is Andy Kahn. All songs on this program can be found on the RCA Legacy Recordings box set, Harry Nilsson, the RCA Albums Collection. All interviews, except Alan Shipton, are courtesy of the Crewneck Productions documentary, Who is Harry Nilsson and Why is Everybody Talking About Him? Special thanks go to Adam Block, Randy Haker, Tom Cording, Kelly Gateson, Rob Santos, Tom Burley, Tara Master, Lee Blackman, John Scheinfeld, Peter Lynch, Alan Shipton, and Una Nilsson. I'm Bud Skapa, and thanks for listening.
And thank you for listening to the Harry Nilsson Special Smeschel. We go out with an early take on Coconut. I'm Cecil Doyle. Join us again tomorrow.
Coconut, he bought it for the diamond. Sister had another one. She paid it for the lime. She put the lime in the coconut. She drank and poured up. She put the lime in the coconut. She drank and poured up. She put the lime in the coconut. She drank and poured up. She put the lime in the coconut. She called the doctor, woke him up and said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, to relieve his belly ache. I said, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, to relieve his belly ache.
Now let me get this straight. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up. Put the lime in the coconut, you called the doctor, woke him up, said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, to relieve his belly ache. Said, Doctor, to relieve his belly, yeah. You put the lime in the coconut, you drink them both together. Put the lime in the coconut, and you feel better. Put the lime in the coconut, drink them both up. Put the lime in the coconut, and call me in the morning. You're such a silly one.